Welcome to the Creating Wealth Simplified podcast. My name is Lauren Wells, here with my co-host, Chris Seveny. We're committed to providing you with the knowledge required to build wealth through real estate investing. Tired of consuming content about real estate? Stuck in analysis paralysis? Ready to do your first deal? As a member of our community, you will learn how to go from consuming content to taking that first step into the world of real estate investing. Our show is not about getting rich quick, but about providing you with the knowledge you need to take action. Join us as we speak with experienced investors who share action tips on how to escape the corporate world, start a thriving side hustle in the world of real estate, and go beyond your W-2 or 401k. Welcome, everyone, to the Creating Wealth Simplified podcast, where each week we bring you awesome guests that bring education and information into the show to help you take your next step in creating wealth through real estate. I'm your host, Lauren Wells, and joining me today is Reed Goossens. Got it. And Reed, actually, I'm really excited for this episode. So a little bit about Reed. In 2012, Reed quit his job in Australia, moved halfway across the world to the US without any network or family, really taking a huge leap of faith. So with limited funds, he purchased his first property that same year, 2012, and since then has co-founded Wildhorn Capital and now controls over $700 million worth of U.S. commercial real estate and has achieved financial freedom. I want to talk more about that in the process. He is also the author of two best-selling books on Amazon, Investing in the U.S., The Ultimate Guide to U.S. Real Estate, and 10,000 Miles to the American Dream, Our Story of Financial Freedom. I am really excited to have you on the show. Welcome, Reed.
Thank you so much, Lauren, for having me. I just probably have to update that bio. Wildhorn Capital was a former company that I founded. Now I founded a couple of syndication companies. Yeah, now RSN Property Group. But really good to be here. Incredible to Friday afternoon. We're just talking about closing on deals and looking forward to bringing some value to your listeners. And hopefully they get a little bit of value out of my story.
Yeah. So I think really where I want to start is what prompted you to move and how did you make that leap, I guess?
The two things that prompted me to move was the love of two different things and the love of a person. So I chased a girl over here. She's now my wife. That's the first love. And the second love was to really live in New York City. I had backpacked through New York in my early 20s in 2009 and really fell in love with the city and was like, I want to live in the New York in the Big Apple at some point in my life. And so it was really just like, mid-20s, screw it, let's go, let's give it a crack and chase this girl. Hopefully it works out. If it doesn't work out, well, I'll move back to Australia and no harm, no foul. So that was really the start of it. And I didn't have a job when I moved here. I was on a tourist visa and I was knocking on different doors, you know, different engineering companies just to try and find a job. And I finally got one and then got a visa. And so the rest is history. Obviously, there's a lot of has happened in between now and then. But yeah, today I founded two companies, RSN Property Group and Wildhorn Capital, and we're a syndication platform. Then we've done about $700 million of acquisitions in the multifamily commercial real estate space. And we actually just closed on a $19 million deal today, being Friday, the September 29th. So it's been a big day. I'm sure we can talk about what's happened in today's market, but a lot has happened since 2012. And I sort of sit here don't wanting to brag, but hopefully people can be inspired by my story. And, you know, if an Aussie can do it, then so can you.
Yeah, I love that. And I think there's a misconception that, and I think don't think social media helps. And I probably talk about this too many times on episodes, but this success and growth happens overnight. 2012 was, 11 years ago, over a decade ago, we'll say. It sounds better that way. Over a decade ago. And so walk me through kind of your first acquisition, what like prompted you to look into real estate, and then kind of the different, I guess you could say, benchmarks or milestones that got you and then to where you are today.
So real estate bug has always been with me prior to moving to the US in 2000. It was probably when I got back from backpacking around the world in late 2009. Like I was in Australia in a cubicle and I read Rich Dad Poor Dad, early 20s, civil engineer, you know, going, I need to do more with my life. And that really prompted me to start thinking about what I can do with my money and could have invested in stock market. I could have invested in businesses, but I chose real estate because I was just happened to be a civil engineer and I was building stuff, right? So started educating myself in Australia, fell in love with this girl and was like, look, I want to move to the US. And then when I got here, it was like 2 weeks fresh off the boat, I was at like my first major networking event, you know, the RIA associations around the country that you might be aware of and your listeners might be aware of. And kudos, big shout out to the RIA group, because that stuff doesn't exist in other parts of the world, right? It's this tapestry of people coming together, sharing education, sharing knowledge about real estate investing. And to me, that was like, oh my gosh, like, yes, that's exactly what I want. So started there, and within like 6 months of moving to the US, I bought my first little property in upstate New York. And that was more to do with just the fact that I wanted to like dive into the deep end. I was sort of at that point, like 2.5 years of self-education. I was like, I got to go and do this. And, you know, I had $30,000 or $40,000 saved up, and I bought a triplex for $38,000. And it was kind of like, it was my money. If I stuffed it up, it's my own money. And yep, you know, that's how I got started. I'll pause there and let you ask any questions, because there's a lot more that sort of unravels over the years to get me to where I am today.
Yeah. So you went multifamily from the start. I mean, smaller multifamily, but yeah.
As much as I could afford.
Yeah. Where in upstate New York? That sounds like a triplex for $38,000 in 2012.
Syracuse,
okay.
New York.
Okay.
And the only reason I chose Syracuse was because it was affordable and I could get the Greyhound bus there from Penn Station, go up in the morning, quickly meet with the broker, come back in the afternoon, and I'd be back in New York City by like 7 o'clock at night. So just more the affordability factor.
Yeah. So it was in state because you were in New York at the time, and you had been, you said, kind of with this RIA group for 2 years. And
No. RIA was like, I only discovered RIA when I moved to the US. So it was beginning of 2012. It was like 2 weeks fresh off the boat. I was at my first event going as an Australian, like, oh my gosh, this is networking on steroids. So the message there is like, don't take that stuff lightly, guys, because it doesn't exist in Australia. It doesn't exist in Europe. Like, these are groups made for real estate investing, and there's such an incredible network of knowledge, and you can learn so much by just attending, you know, just paying 20, 30 bucks at the door, and you can start rubbing shoulders with people who you aspire to be. So that's kind of the message there.
Yeah. And I think that's important, because I'm always telling people, find your local RIA event, go to your local RIA group, chapter, whatever that is, because there is such good like-minded individuals and people to learn from. But something I think you said that is all hard for a lot of people is people get stuck in that analysis of like, I'm going to try to learn. And at some point you just have to do with what you have. And that might not be $1 million. It might be $35,000, $39,000. So making that choice, okay, how did that pan out? And how did you kind of launch that into your next?
Yeah. So it panned out okay. Like, I guess the message there is like, you don't get to deal number 10 without doing deal number one. Yep. So it's not all about always about hitting a home run. Like, it was a big lesson in Section 8 housing. It was Class D properties. It wasn't very ideal. Like, we had a drive-by shooting at the house. Like, it wasn't by any stretch of the means ideal. I think I sold it for like maybe $7,000 profit, but it got me going. Like, it got me in the game. And that's the most important part. It also led me to my second property that I purchased, which was another duplex. And then it led me to a third property that was a fix and flip in Philadelphia. So again, you don't get to these $700 million of acquisitions without doing that first one. And it takes a little bit, and it gets you going, and it really proves to yourself that you can do it, right? Because that was the biggest thing. And back to the analysis paralysis, I sort of equate it to like work, you know, going to the gym. I love working out. You can read about going to the gym, but you don't actually, it's not going to transition your body in terms of, you got to actually open the door and get on the treadmill, right? So it's the same sort of thing. It's like, I can read all these books in the background and they're going to make me knowledgeable, but you need to go and put it on into all this knowledge into action and put it on and see if it's going to work and put it on the street. And you might get your ass handed to you, but you might not. So that's the end of the day, you educate yourself and to try and avoid pitfalls, but there's going to be pitfalls, right? And that's where education and surrounding yourself with mentors and like-minded people are really, really important, because they can help you avoid the pitfalls that ultimately we'll all make some pitfalls. It's just trying to minimize those pitfalls as you grow businesses or, you know, start investing in real estate.
Yeah, definitely. And so from there, how did Wildhorn, I know you said it's not Wildhorn anymore, but how did that come to be? Was that kind of the first step away from using your own capital? And
there's sort of a step before that, and that was like getting a mentor. And that mentor, I sort of helped introduce him to another business partner. And I was working full time. I had to stay in this country. To stay in this country, I needed a full time job. So in 2014, I made the move back to Los Angeles, where my wife is from. And I was working at a structural engineering firm and met a gentleman and had got this mentor and coach, because I knew I needed to sort of do more And that was where it was sort of like I needed to start investing in my own sort of personal brand. And that's where the podcast and, you know, investing in the US came about. And it was more sort of talking to other people about my journey of like how to start an LLC and what's an EIN number and what's cash flow mean. And through that, it was like trying to raise money for other people's deals, i.e. my mentor. I then fast forwarding quickly, I at the same point in time, I made a very key decision, which was I use my skill set of being a structural engineer to go and get another corporate job because, again, I needed that visa to be in the country. And I went and joined a big development firm here in Los Angeles because I had a skill set that they found valuable and I could be surrounded by real estate 24/7. So I could, you know, highest paying corporate job I could find in the real estate sector, plus doing my deals on the side. So there's many, many steps in that process that were very key. And then we did 4 major syndications, roughly a bit over 1,000 units before I got to the point where I got my green card and actually quit my corporate job. And that was the start of Wildhorn, was around a partnership between me and my former partner. I was based in Los Angeles. He was based in Texas. I was looking at deals in Texas. I didn't have boots on the ground in Texas, but I came from that institutional background of construction management, asset management in the day-to-day corporate job that I had. And it was like I had a skill set. He had a skill set because he was local and we came together and we probably did 8 or 9 deals over the years. But before I actually went full-time, it was a period of time where we were like doing 40, 50 hours a week at the day job and then doing the syndications on the side, finding deals, underwriting deals, raising the capital, all that sort of good stuff back in sort of 2014 to sort of 2018. So a lot of things in there in terms of the story and the journey, but back to what you said before, overnight success, it takes 10 years to get there. So
success. Yeah. And I think the strategic decision of using your current skill set in corporate, but while also learning, I think a lot of people think mentor and they think coach these days or someone I have to pay. And I think the takeaway from what you just told us is it doesn't necessarily have to be a coaching program or someone that you're paying to coach you. It can literally be someone you meet at a RIA, someone you meet, I don't know, networking in your company or using your skills at your company where you're learning about whatever it is, real estate, for example.
Now, don't get me wrong. I did pay a mentor. That was sort of in parallel to me switching careers. It was the both two things happened together. And I did pay someone. It was the littlest amount of money I could find for a mentor. But it was that payment, Lauren, is about, it's a mental investment in yourself, right? Yep. Like I am worth this money. And so many people pay mentors and don't do anything with it, right? Yep. But I was coming from the fact that I needed to find someone who was sort of young and hungry like me. I didn't want to find and pay someone $30,000 to do nothing. And the second thing was, looking back on it, it was an investment in myself. And that's really the big leap of faith that I'm worthy of taking that investment because, you know, I can change my trajectory in my life. Like no one else is going to come and hand me the keys of the kingdom by sitting on the couch. So it was trying to take that control. One, quitting the job that I hated engineering. I was so fed up with it. Looking back, I had the sort of foresight to say, well, I could use this skill set in another corporate job and continue to learn there. Plus also on the outside of work, like I need someone to really teach me this multifamily business and then try and mirror up the two in terms of skill sets, learning on either side of the coin to give me the best starting possibility to go and start a company and do it for myself eventually.
We hope you're enjoying this episode of Creating Wealth Simplified. We wanted to take a moment and tell you more about our passive income fund at 7E, which is open to both accredited and non-accredited investors. Our latest offering targets an 8% annual return distributed monthly with the ability to potentially achieve a greater return through our bonus share program. If you'd like more information, reach out to us at invest@70investments.com to learn more. Thank you.
Yeah. So you were in the multifamily space again, kind of from the start. And I want to talk about the economic kind of differences between now and then.
Sure.
Especially in the multifamily space. So Wildhorn, those, what you said, 2014 to 2018, correct?
Yep.
Yeah. So talk about that versus now. And how you're making decisions and how that looks different.
Yeah, so we were buying deals at $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 a door. Today, deals are getting done at $150,000, $200,000 a door. You know, like it is a completely different landscape out there. I just closed on a deal in Phoenix, Arizona today with my current company, RSN Property Group, and we paid $185,000 a door for it, right? Now, look, you look historically at those deals, I'm sure they would have traded back in the day at those historical rates. But guess what else was also low back then? And that was rent. You know, back in the day, rent was probably for a single bedroom, probably $550. For a two bedroom was probably $750. Today, a one bedroom in Phoenix would probably go for, on the low end, $1,000. And then a two bedroom on the high end could probably go for as much as $1,700 on sort of class B, C plus workforce housing type of stuff. The same was similar in Central Texas. The same is similar in other secondary parts of the country. So these trends, the value, so to speak, has been driven by also the cost of rent going up, coupled with the fact that like a lot of people are now involved in this space and there's been a big transition to alternative assets in the last sort of 10 years. Helped along by stuff like the Jobs Act, which we can talk about, allowing retail investors to invest directly into syndicators like myself. So there's a lot of things that have gone on. You're right, in probably a year and a half ago, in 2003, so like early 2021, it was like the peak coming out of COVID and there was just astronomical highs. And I sold a bunch of deals and made some incredible money. And now we've seen a complete like dip in the commercial real estate. Like I've seen upwards of like this deal I just purchased, I saw that a year ago and they wanted 30% higher for it than what I picked it up for today. And that's because interest rates have gone up at a, you know, astronomical rate in 2022 in a response to fighting inflation. But that's also caused a lot of problems in floating rate debt and commercial real estate, which I'm sure we'll talk about, you know, and I'm sure you're seeing, and I'm sure a lot of your clients are seeing that are making people nervous. But in general, compared to back we were, we're still looking at the fundamentals. You know, is real estate, is rent growing? Are people still needing a roof over their head? And, you know, is there a lack of supply in terms of housing? And those three boxes are still being ticked today.
Yeah. And I think something that's important to note is I think multifamily and the commercial space at this time overall, if you're not in it, it gets a bad rap right now. But I think it's finding the sponsors and the people who are still looking at exactly what you said. Is rent growing? Are people needing housing? And then also the opportunity is there. If you see, obviously, that dip, like you just mentioned, the property that you looked at, like I think you said a year and a half ago, you got for significantly less because you waited. So not about kind of committing to the first deal. What would you say if someone is looking to invest in a syndication of some sort in the commercial space, what would you say are some questions that they should be asking of the sponsor today?
I think, how's your portfolio going today is the number one. Do you have floating rate debt on your deals? And do you have a rate cap on those deals? Because I know a lot of people back in the day, 2-3 years ago, bought deals with no rate cap. And we can talk about what a rate cap is, with floating rate debt when debt was cheap. And that's debt and interest rates are tied, and so are market cap rates. So when assets are trading for 4 and 5 caps, usually the Federal Reserve rate is around 4 and 5%. Now the Federal Reserve rate is at 5.5 to 6%. Guess what's expanded? Cap rates have expanded. And then the value of those assets have also decreased compared to, you know, 24 months ago when interest rates were a lot lower. Now, I do believe interest rates will go back to being maybe not as historically as what we've seen, but they will come off the boil. And if you can pick up something that has had an expanded cap rate, I mentioned the deal we bought today, 25% discount to what it was 18 months ago. I still do believe that in a compressing cap rate environment, as interest rates, they will cut interest rates, trust me, at some point, that will only benefit us as investors. So,
yeah. Where do you think the opportunity as a sponsor lies in the next year?
All about like trying to find other sponsors who are in distress. And there are, trust me, I'm having conversations within my inner circles and the people, big groups struggling, right?
Yeah, we just came back from a conference where this was actually, we're in the residential mortgage note space, but the commercial space, it was a big topic of discussion and pretty much exactly what you said. There's a lot of distressed sponsors, debt out there for people to capitalize on if that's there.
People aren't talking about it, but it's there, right? Like, and if you know where to look, it's coming. And it's just how long can people, you know, hold on to survive. So
something that you talked about, and I think one of the books you wrote was about financial freedom. Now, that word, freedom, it is the, I think, the most probably popular word that is used in conjunction with real estate investing or passive investing. Now, give me your definition of financial freedom? And it, has that evolved as you've kind of grown?
Yeah. Like the old saying, you quit your 9 to 5 to work 24/7. Like yeah. that sort of. Yep.
I think that's, and that's exactly what I was alluding to, is when people leave their W-2, I think there's the first job. I left my W-2 and then I have financial freedom. But unless you have passive income, that's not financial freedom. You're working probably harder or your own owner. So tell me a little bit about kind of that journey for you.
Look, you and I are both probably similar age and you usually start with nothing, right? And so a lot of what I've built, probably what you've built, is through sweat equity and working hard, and that builds up equity over time. And like, I tell you what, I'm 37 years of age today. In 10 years time, like, I do not want to be an operator anymore. You know what I mean? Like, I want to be investing in other people's deals, right? That's sort of the cycle that will, I will always be an investor at heart, right? Being an operator is because I've come through the ranks of my civil engineering and into the corporate world, and that added value when I'm starting my business, right? And that could attract capital because it's like, hey, Reed's got some experience. And then over the last sort of 7 or 8 years, we've built a portfolio of multifamily real estate, which in time I will transition into being more of a maybe private equity, that I place my own capital and other sponsors' deals and not have to do the hard stuff, you know, constant asset management calls at the coalface, just like grinding away with delinquency and tenants and construction management and all that stuff, which is what we build, what investors trust me to go out and do every single day, right? But you're right, it's not a financial freedom, but it's a freedom that I've chosen to start a company. Or the other route would have been, it was been stay my day job in my cubicle in Australia and never have gone down this path. So I've always been one to challenge and not be complacent with unfulfilled potential. And if that doesn't, and that's what I'm doing right now. So yes, my financial picture looks 10 times different than what it was when I started, but it's come through a lot of work. That will look different in 10 years' time as well, as you now, you amass wealth, and then you grow that wealth in different ways. So yes, to your point, when you start from nothing, it takes a lot to build that up to a nest egg where you can then become that passive investor, the financial freedom. There's elements, which I'm sure we can talk about, is like the addicted to the grind and all that sort of stuff. And you, I constantly say, like, this business is somewhat flawed because you've got to go out and keep hunting for the next deal, right? You're not building a widget and selling mass quantities of that widget, and that you just manage the business over the next 20 years. It's, when's that next deal coming through? When's that next cash flow coming through? So, and I know that, and my wife knows that, and we've spoken about that in depth. But as an investor, like, long term, real estate, commercial real estate, has been and will continue to be a very, very good place to park your money and to grow it over the long term. So yeah.
And then, kind of the last thing I wanted to touch upon was you, and you talked about this a little bit earlier, was your personal brand.
Mm-hmm.
So for people who are becoming you, a sponsor, an operator, talk about building your personal brand and how that's important and how that helped you really kind of build what you've built today.
It's the crux of it all, right? Like, at the end of the day, you can take a wild horn away or you can take different names away, but my business is me. It's people invest in me personally, right? They invest in the trust. So building a personal brand around investing in the US was around interviewing other like-minded people and experts around how to build wealth, like exactly what we're doing right now. And that helped me build it, you know, not necessarily track record, but it helped me build credibility in a shorter period of time, because this is a day of information. And then putting out my story, the Moving to America story, was around attracting other people who maybe think like I think. Like, I'm not going to attract everyone. I don't intend to attract everyone to be my customer, but I attract people who resonate with my story, and thus that's a personal brand, right? And I put myself out there. And then, you know, back to what I was saying, my business is my brand. It's me, Reed Goossens. Like, that's who I am, and that no one can take that away from you. And the beauty of this, Lauren, is that everyone has a freaking awesome story. You just got to know how to tell it well. And that's through podcasting and writing books and blogs and all that sort of stuff. So, and trust me, this interaction and talking on podcasts, it's a skill you learn. Like, I was a mathematical geek engineer, the very black and white brain. Like, I had to sort of like, what the hell is this personal brand BS? You know what I mean? Like, what the hell is putting your name on a book and putting a podcast out and making sure you've got social media? And some of that I still freaking hate to this day, but like, I know it helps shorten that time people get to know me.
Yeah. And I think that something, my kind of take on personal brand is that is just that, personal. And I think that for people looking to try to be someone else or have someone else's voice, that's never going to work for you. you really have to just own who you are. And I feel like, especially when you're raising capital, that trust is crucial. The hook is what you're selling, is the product and the asset you're, but they invest because of you, the sponsor. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're trying to sound like someone else, people have a good sense of, I feel like people have a better sense than we give them credit for of sussing out someone's like true self. And if they get a good feeling or a bad feeling.
Yep.
And if you're being sincere and honest, or if you're trying to say what you think you should say.
Right.
Yeah.
As cliche as that might sound, that's completely correct. You know, like being true to your word.
I know. It sounds super cliche.
So cliche. You just got to work hard and, you know, just keep going at it and being truthful. Like, you know, it kind of is that. And the other thing is when you do start personal brand, it's a long game. It's not going to happen overnight. Like to build reputation, it can go in an instant, but it takes not a lifetime, but it takes years to build. And so that's another thing I just want to touch on briefly.
Yeah. Well, kind of along that same line, finding your voice, and your voice will evolve, and you'll find, you know, for example, take writing on LinkedIn or doing, like you said, doing a podcast. It takes time to figure out what works for you and how you present yourself. And the more you do it, the more in tune with your message or your voice you become. And I think people think, oh, if I take this, if I, you know, do this one pager on my brand and who I am, like that's a great place to start. Don't get me wrong, but like be okay with that evolving as you grow and you have more experiences and more interactions and more, I don't know, conversations.
Pitches, you know, talking to investors, you know, all that sort of stuff. Yeah. Like, and it will, because there's a great book and it's not on, might be on my shelf. Same author, but different. He's done a whole bunch of stuff. It's called, this is called 24 Assets, but he does another, Dan Priestley, he does another book called Key Person of Influence. And it's got nothing to do with real estate, but it's got everything to do with how you pitch yourself, right? And he talks in that book about Martin Luther King, about the I Have a Dream speech, right? It's a classic speech that everyone knows, but you've got to pitch it. He had to pitch it 1,000 times in different churches across the South back in the late 50s and early 60s before it became on the Washington Monument. The same is true, obviously in different scales. We're not, you know, civil rights, but when you have a pitch about your business, you've got to energize people. And it's not just going to be about the, you know, the one page you build. It's going to be about the consistency of message and the different platforms you use to get your message out and the time at the saddle, so to speak, to get people to understand what you're saying and, you know, what your business is all about. So that goes back to making sure you have the sort of long view of the game, because it isn't something that you're going to start as a personal brand like, oh, I tried it for 6 months. It didn't work. You know, like this is multiple years of what you've built, what I've built. It's sort of a, you're not trying to have the millions of people or the Tony Robbins of the world. They're great examples, but you can have a following of 500 people, and 500 people can completely change your business. And they've been attracted because they like your story. So there's, it's not about
It's not go viral or go home.
That's right. It's not about viral. Yeah, it's not about being the most viral thing on the internet. It honestly isn't. It's about consistency around your message. And honestly, as you probably know, biting off what you can chew, because doing podcasts, writing books, you know, newsletters, it can be, it's a full-time job in itself, right?
Yeah, and so while you're also managing your properties and everything else and your investors and anything. And you can't be consistent if you have taken on more than you can commit to.
Right.
So I think trying everything at once, fine, but find what works for you. If it's not podcasting, if it's writing on LinkedIn, or if it's, heck, TikTok, you probably get a lot of people on there. So...
Or what we've been speaking about this whole time, the RIAs, right? They're old-fashioned meetup events.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
A great place to pitch yourself.
Right. If you also a great place to start a platform is maybe you're in a city that doesn't have real estate investment club. Start one. You eventually will do that enough and have enough meetings that you will be the key person of influence in the room.
Yeah. So to wrap it up, if people are interested in learning more about what you do and connecting with you, where can they find you?
Two different places, depending on what you want. ReedGoossens.com. That's ReedGoossens.com. I'm across all the social media platforms, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn. You can check me out there. I do a weekly podcast called Investing in the US. That's all about the educational side. If you want more on the real estate investment side, our investment platform is rsnpropertygroup.com. And if you're ever coming through Los Angeles, you want to hit me up, you can hit me up at info@reedgoosens.com. Just give me a heads up about when you're coming through town and we can meet up for a beer, talk shop, have a coffee, lunch, whatever.
I love that. And I think that that's something that the real estate world is really good about. Like, hey, if you're in town or if you're ever in my city, reach out. And I'd be curious to see how many people take you up on that.
Surprisingly, not as many as you think. Like there's out of the years I've been doing this, there's like, I could probably count on less than two hands the amount of people that have actually said, hey, man, I'm coming through town. You're like, you listened all the way to the end. You get the prize.
There you go. Well, thank you guys so much for joining us today on this episode of the CWS podcast. If you enjoyed the show, share it with a friend, subscribe, or leave us a review. I'll also make sure that Reed's contact information and links are posted in the show notes. Until next time, thank you, Reed.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining Lauren and I on this episode of the Creating Wealth Simplified podcast. Each week, we bring you expert education, experience, and information in a digestible format to help you identify investment opportunities so you can build wealth through real estate and take action toward your financial goals. Enjoy the show, share with a friend, or subscribe to the show and leave us a review.